We are live, and welcome to episode 3661 of the Survival Podcast. If you're tracking it as a Bitcoin breakout episode, which it will also be published at thebitcoinbreakout.com and on the Bitcoin Breakout YouTube channel, it is episode, 59. I did not plan to be gone for pretty much a whole week, come back and do a Bitcoin episode. But something happened while I was gone. And I was up at Nicole's Sauces at Living Free in Tennessee, LFTN 25. It was great. I have a list like this long of ideas for topics. And they're all either entrepreneurial. There's a couple. AI related. There's one. But the majority of them are like homestead, which is what you would think. Homestead, permaculture, regenerative ag. I mean, Alan Booker did four sessions there, 90 minutes each, and listening to him is like listening to like a Gen Xer that's almost a boomer that is like a version of Bill Mollison without the accent, with a little less breaking your brain with things that are not related to what he's talking about, more breaking your brain with what exactly he's talking about. So I got all this stuff I want to talk about, but something happened while I was gone. The formation, the announcement of a new company, which is not public yet, but that's the intent for this thing to be closed down, eventually all of the deals made, and go public, called 21 Capital. And this is completely in the Bitcoin realm, and it's too big to ignore. And as I looked at all the announcement and all the discussion and all the talk around it and what the people behind 21 Capital said they were going to do, there was something distinctively missing. And that is what they're going to do. What they've basically said is, we will be 21 Capital. We are made up of these entities and run by this person. We'll get to all of that in a minute. And our primary goal will be to increase the Bitcoin per share of the stock. Okay. And what they mean simply by that is, when you buy Masterlink right now, run by Michael Saylor, you know that they have a huge amount of Bitcoin, like the most that any, I think they might have the most any single entity other than the Satoshi stash there is. It's over 500,000. Michael just announced today that they bought like another 32,000 Bitcoin, bringing their basis to about $68,000 per Bitcoin. So they're well into the money. And we'll talk a little bit about how MicroStrategy leverages that reserve to issue debt and bring in more capital to buy more Bitcoin. But they're like, we're way more than Strategy B, which is what MicroStrategy has now changed its name to, and I think they are. But if you want to just understand that, what they mean, you have, let's say, 100 shares of this new company, 21 Capital, and let's say that each share is 1/100th of a Bitcoin in its reserve. So by owning the share, you own everything the company does, plus so you understand, when you own a share in a company, you have an ownership stake in a company, then that share is worth 1/100th of a Bitcoin, and they want to make it 1/50th, and then 1/125th, and so on. Now, if you're a smart financial person, I see where this goes. They can also play the game of splitting the stock and then reducing it, but saying, and they could, that does not go that far yet. Like, you're advanced thinking if you're there. You probably stocks or something if you're thinking there. But that's their stated goal. But what I say is, they don't say what they do. How? Just because if it was just, hey, we're going to take in money and buy Bitcoin, why the hell would I buy your stock? That's great. You could get it up to one share, has one Bitcoin. I could just go buy Bitcoin. What are you going to do with it? How is this company going to make money? How is this company, it sounds like what they're going to do, it's like 42,000 Bitcoin they're going to establish with. And they're going to do that through the partners just basically staking money, like you do when you put up a company. They'll either stake the Bitcoin or stake the capital in dollars or yen or whatever, buy the Bitcoin, put it in the company. Okay, great. There's 42,000 Bitcoin there. How do you make 43,000, 44,000, 45,000? So while I was gone, And I'm talking to people about biochar and bioreactors and listening to Alan Booker blow my mind with what one family did when the high net worth family put in $250,000 completely off the grid greenhouse that produces some ridiculous amount of food a month. It could be commercial, with $1 million water feature, and all this stuff's going through my head. I can't let go of this. Like, I want to know, well, what are you going to do? Here's a problem. And the problem is always when permaculture is a solution. I think I know. And I'm waiting to hear anybody freaking say it. And I hear some speculation on the edges of it. And it's all, well, we don't really know. And I'm thinking, okay, wait, we got three primary entities coming together, plus a CEO from a fourth entity. And we know what those companies do now. Now, if you take and make a mathematical formula, a mathematical logic problem out of that, okay, then it should be easy to go, the most logical outcome is X. I look at the logical outcome and I go, so that's like pretty much everything you've said was going to happen. So what happens when you see something, if you're willing to put a check on yourself and you realize in doing so that, like, you're seeing what you want to see. We all want to be right. I make a joke when I'm wrong. Sometimes I even play like wah wah music. Jack was wrong. Wah wah wah. Right. And I'm willing to be wrong, but I'm also not unaware that I'm subject to perception bias, right? And confirmation bias. And so I'm looking for anybody to say what I think I see here, and I can't find anybody doing it. And I see everybody from little crypto, grubby, chill the next shitcoin people talking about it, all the way up to people like Swan Bitcoin talking about it. I still don't see it. And so I thought I'll come here and I'll tell you what I think's happening. I'll give you my analysis. But I'm also not unaware that when I give my analysis, at least some portion of the audience, the portion that likes Bitcoin, might be like, I'm going to do this because Jack said so. I don't ever want anybody to do that. I want you to take my information, factor it in with what you know, and make decisions for yourself and your world, because I can't make decisions for you because I don't know how much money you have, how old you are, what your goals are, what your future's like, how many kids. I don't know. Like, I think people that start telling you what you should do with your money should shut the fuck up, even when they're right, because they may not be right for you. So I decided to do something. And Adrian says, the sailor playbook on steroids. No. No, and when I'm done today, you'll understand why that's not it. Because these entities can do things that strategy B, as of right now, anyway, without a complete change of the corporate doctrine, which might be part of the name change, can't actually do yet. And the ability to do them, yeah, on steroids, sure, but what are those things, right? Anyway, let me get back to what I'm trying to get to here. So this is what I decided to do today, and there's more to it than what I did. Like, I'm going to give you something that I can't give you while we're doing this, but after it's over, if you use that magic link, if you're watching the video anyway, that's down there, and go to the audio notes, there'll be a transcription in a PDF that you can read of me doing this with AI, ChatGPT. And sometimes when creators use ChatGPT, people are like, oh, you're just a jagoff that just says what ChatGPT says and predicts. That's not what I do. And one of the reasons I'm putting out this transcript is if you read it, you'll understand how wrong that is, at least about me. Now, there are people who do it, and I won't say who they are or anything, but there are certain tells. Like, I saw a thread on this, and in the thread, it said that MicroStrategy or Strategy B was the largest holder of Bitcoin, holding more than 324,000 Bitcoin. That's because ChatGPT isn't always up to date, and you have to know what you're talking about to get where you want to be. But I came back from Tennessee. I got in at noon yesterday. I was tired as crap after a week being up there and answering questions, and you never sleep as well, and you're up late and all. And I got nothing done yesterday. I went to bed very early, but this was all in my head. So I got up this morning, and what I did is I fed everything from the base into ChatGPT. I asked it, explain to me what these companies do, like I'm a smart high school kid, not like I'm an economist, etc. And then I said, you tell me what you think a business model looks like based on what these companies do and their histories. And what came out Yeah, Adrian, you're on it now. Okay, but I'm not going to say anything for everybody else, right? What do you think they're doing? What do you think the business model looks like? And it comes out like 90-95% of what I thought. And I even asked it, did I lead you to this? Did I give you too much? No. And then I said, okay, assume we're wrong. What are the other possibilities? And it gave me some. And I said, two of these really interest me. Let's go into those. And I think those are going to happen too. And they're like add-ons to it. And one of them I would have never got to without it. Anyway, there's a point in that conversation where I stop kind of probing things and I start actually building the show. Make me a synopsis, make me an outline, cover art, all that stuff for the show. From that point up, I generated a PDF. I'm going to give it to you today. I'm going to give it to you. You can go look at me actually building most of the content for the show, because inevitably what happens is once I start generating the marketing collateral, the show notes, et cetera, I think, oh, what about this? And I start, that's all missing from it. But right up until I'm like, okay, let's write a 200 word summary for the show notes today. From that above, I'm going to give it all to you. All you have to do, go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Or BitcoinBreakout.com. Pull up this episode on the Survival Podcast numbers. Again, it's 3661. There'll be a link in the show notes. You can download the whole PDF and you can read it. I think it'll be really interesting if you like today's episode, but it'll also help you understand if you're using AI how to use it better. On that note, I have said once on the air that I'm going to do a course on how to use ChatGPT. That's going to be done over 8 weeks, Monday through Friday, taking weekends off. That gives you a series of prompts and instructions per day, and then we will be discussing them. I said that one time. I've never said anything on the air since I started as an aside that has generated this much interest. I'd say one in three people at LaCole Sauce's thing, they were mostly there for like homestead stuff, when they came to me, they said, when is that going to start? And the answer is sometime next month, close to the launch of my book. Because the book is a lifestyle design book, but there's a lot in it about entrepreneurship. I think they'll fit well together. And I was like 80% done with it, and I'm trying to find ways to add more value to it without a lot more work for me. So here's what's going to happen. That course will probably launch around the day the book launches, which is May 12th, maybe a week later, maybe 2 weeks later. And I'm going to add some bonuses to it, and one of those bonuses is going to be when I do what I did today, I'm going to take the transcript, including all the show creation, and each day I'm going to drop a transcript that shows me using it for production in real time of shows. Some days that'll be very brief, some that'll be very involved, and some days it won't be anything. Like, I really don't use it much at all for expert counsel shows. I don't use it at all for Friday flashbacks. But to actually see an entrepreneur who's built a successful business using it in his business exactly how might teach you more than the whole course. Plus, there'll be interaction between all the students. So I was going to do this super cheap, super fast, super light, and do it like $20. I'll just let you know, we might be looking at like $100 for a seat in this course. But by the time it's ready to go, you might be ready to pay twice. And I want you to know this too. Like, I am doing everything I can to cut Tom in, who does all the technical bullshit to make this show actually function and run the server, on as much revenue as I can. And I have him on splits on different things. On this, I've offered him a 50-50 split. So with that, I think I'll be able to do some of the things I'm going to promise and actually deliver them. And I want to still under promise and over deliver. So that's just like, that's the sponsor segment for today. I kind of snuck it in on you. But let's talk about the main subject, but I need to tell you something else first related to Bitcoin that you should be aware of, and it should not even affect you. And if it does, you're wrong, you're a bad boy, and you smack your own hand when you hear it, okay? I got an email today on Sunday telling me that Coinbase is being attacked by the FCC or the SEC, I don't remember which one they said, and I needed to move all my money off Coinbase into a Coinbase wallet. and gave me instructions on how to do that. And all the links actually go to Coinbase. That none of them are phishing links in of themselves. But you know what's there? My new seed phrase. Most of you should be sophisticated enough to know right there that's a scam. But if you're keeping all your holdings on Coinbase, even though you think you're sophisticated, you're probably not. You should be self-custodying. And it's just sophisticated enough to trick some people. That's not happening. Don't do it. Never let nobody who's a legit exchange would ever hand you a seed phrase in an email. That's just retarded. So be aware of that. Okay. Let's talk about this. 21 Capital, if you haven't heard about it, what is it? 21 Capital is backed by three companies, and those are Cantor, Tether, and SoftBank. Cantor, you might not recognize the name. Cantor Fitzgerald may ring a little bit better of a bell. And let's start off with what do these three companies do, and what are they doing together? What are they saying publicly right now? And what they're saying first is that they're going to be a Bitcoin company, that they're kind of like MicroStrategy, but MicroStrategy does all these other things. They are only existing as a Bitcoin company that is designed to increase shareholder value by continuously stacking more Bitcoin in the possession of the company. So again, you own a share in the company, you're staking the company what it does, plus the Bitcoin reserve keeps going up, right? That's the promise. But they haven't said anything about how they're going to do this. So before we start speculating about what the actual business model is, which can't be we stack Bitcoin, because again, you're an ETF at best. And why would I use you versus somebody else? And if it's so I can invest in my 401k or whatever, the ETFs do that. And so if I put my money in your company, I don't care how much Bitcoin you have, I want to know what you're going to do that I couldn't do for myself. That's an investor mindset. I only give you my money when you can do better with it than I can. I don't put any money into anything other than my business until I've maximized my business. Then I put it in savings, and this is a cruise of savings. Then I invest it. And when I invest it, I have to look at that investment and say, I don't care if the ROI is 11% and my financial advisor says that's good. If I can do better than 11%, I'm not giving it to you. Hopefully that makes sense. So to figure out what they're going to do to make that buyer's case for the investor, look, let's start off with, if you're building a house, what are the bricks made out of? So here's the very simple explanation. Cantor Fitzgerald does investment banking, trading, and financial services. That's what they do. I'm going to go back through and give you how they make money in a minute, but that's what they do. Tether issues stable coins pegged to real world currencies in primarily the United States dollar. Okay. SoftBank invests heavily in technology and financial startups. They act as a bank where you go to store and get money, but you're not going to open up an account with SoftBank. This is for major corporations. This is for wealthy people to gain leverage rather than spend their own money. That's what SoftBank does. And then there's one not mentioned here, except when they say the CEO of this thing, this new thing, these three companies coming and partnering together to make this new entity called 21 Capital, is Jack Mallers. So we have to look at Strike as a player in this, even though initially it's not. If I have a CEO of two companies, and he cares equally about both companies, there's crossover, especially when they're in some piece of the same business, okay? And Strike is a Bitcoin payment platform and financial service provider. That's what they are. Now, how do these companies make money? So I'm going to give you a very simple explanation of these, how they make money. If you have any questions, put the word question in all caps if you're in a live stream, and give me your question in one sentence about what I'm about to say, and I'll try to answer it for you. But Cantor Fitzgerald makes money by helping companies buy and sell investments like stocks and bonds, and by earning fees when they manage big real estate deals. They also trade for themselves and try to make profits directly with the capital they earn. They then reinvest. They say, basically, if I can trade your money for you, I should be able to make money with those same trades with my own money. which is a good value proposition. I'm not making an ethical judgment on these companies when I say good. I'm saying they're good at what they do. Okay. Tether makes money mainly by investing the cash people give them when they buy USDT, mostly in safe things like government bonds, and they keep the interest earned. They also charge some small fee for services of moving around large amounts of money. They also hold a lot of Bitcoin, so in their reserve, they don't just have things like U.S. treasuries and bonds. They actually have Bitcoin in the reserves. They take a portion of the profit, put that in reserves, and that allows them to issue more Tether with lower leverage and then repurpose some capital, okay? SoftBank, which most people have never heard of, right, because they're not U.S.-based, even close, they make money by investing early in companies they think will grow huge. So they're investment management bank, right? But they're cherry-picking companies that they invest in. They're investing in the kind of companies you don't even know exist because some of them don't exist yet. They're like a giant corporate angel investor, but they don't think like an angel investor. They think like a very conservative capitalist investor, like this is a good bet. And so imagine if you could have been funding Apple before anybody knew what Apple was, or funding Microsoft. That's their goal. Find that next giant corporation. Whether they make widgets or software doesn't matter. And they then sell their shares later for profits. They also own parts of companies that pay them money regularly. So they will invest in that company early on, and then they may sell off a big piece of their investment, but they may hold on to the equivalent of 5% of that company and earn a dividend flow one way or another out of that company. Okay? Now, like I said, those are your three companies building this. We can't ignore Strike because they turn around at the same time they announce they're doing this, and these three companies will come together. And when they finally drop as a entity, because they don't actually exist yet, it's the building of an entity or what's happening, the CEO of that new entity will be Jack Mallers, who's the CEO of Strike, and he says, I'm not leaving Strike. So we should at least consider, what does Strike do in this analysis? Strike makes money by charging small fees on crypto transactions, especially when businesses use its payment services. They also earn money helping people instantly swap between Bitcoin and dollars, and they take a tiny cut on each of those. So even though I said there's no fees, there's fees. They're just so low you don't really care about them. And they have back-end ways they plug into other things to make money. And before we go on, we have to talk about Jack Mallers for a minute. Somebody said here, who was it? I got to scroll up a little bit. Texas Plant Company said Jack Mallers is smart. He is, and nothing I'm about to say should take away from what he's done. Okay, we all start somewhere. He just didn't start where most of you think. What I'm about to tell you about Jack Mallers is something you probably don't know, but it's no secret at all. The information's out there and freely available. Jack Mallers presents himself, you know, he's this young kid, and he's been around a while now, so he's gotten a little older like we all have. But especially when he first came on the scene, he's got this kind of radical, like an unkempt perm hair. He's got his hoodie, right? And he's a scrappy guy, and his story of how he created Strike can be completely right, but it won't change what I'm going to add to it. You know, he got this idea, he learned about lightning and blah, 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 and like it was really cool, and he got this idea in his head, he couldn't get rid of it, and he went in his closet, and he started coding this new lightning application that ended up being called Strike. He got so into it, his girlfriend threatened to leave him, and he didn't give a shit. He was so wrapped up in it, he went ahead and kept doing it, and she left, and now she's probably like, wow, I wish I would have done that. And then he released this thing, and then it just took off. Kind of true, but this is what most people do not know about Jack Mallers. And again, this is not a secret. It's just not talked about. Jack Mallers comes from a very wealthy and very connected family. And they are wealthy and connected specifically from an investment, banking, and financial management perspective. And when I say wealthy, I don't mean like the successful guy that's a financial investment manager who's worth $20 million. I mean very big, very high end, especially his father. His grandfather was a Chicago Board of Trade trader, meaning he had a seat on the Chicago Exchange. And that's something that at the time he had it was way more of a big deal than it would be today. We live in a new world, that really started around the dot-com boom when it comes to trading stocks. Companies like E-Trade, companies like today Robinhood, et cetera. But E-Trade was one of the first to offer these online platforms. And you could just get online and say, I want, you know, like I did way back when Ford didn't take the government bailout. That's how way back I'm talking about. And all the car manufacturers are going to go out of business. And like Dodge and Chevy both got a big check from the government. Ford's like, we can do this without you. And their stock dropped to like $4 a share. Well, I had an E-Trade account. And I'm like, I bought $10,000 worth of Ford stock that minute. I'm like, I can buy a company that's over 100 years old that pays a dividend for $4 a share. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Okay. When my dad was the age I was at the time I did that, that would have been a phone call to a broker and a lot of other things. And this is one there was time to get into. But a lot of times things like that happen really quick. And by the time you call your broker puts in the order. You remember the old movies, the guys running around with tickets? Buy, sell, running back and forth between trading desks. Like, to have the ability to execute trades at that speed, you need a seat on the exchange. Mahler's granddad had one of those seats on the Chicago Exchange when it was a really, really, it's still a big deal, but a really big deal. Before any of the electronic immediate, you could not just say, right now, this minute, I want to buy X number of shares of Y stock. You could not do that before the advent of electronic trading. His father co-founded a major futures brokerage. So these guys are not just wealthy, they're connected. Additionally, Mahler's was very early introduced into Bitcoin. Like, he pops up around the time the Lightning Network is really coming. But there's pictures of him hanging out with Dorsey, right, from 2013. So he's been in Bitcoin as long or longer than I have. Okay? So just understand that when he turned this company up, it wasn't just, hey, I made this app and it worked. It was, where do I get funding? How do I create liquid? Like, even if he didn't know, he could plug into his old man's network and immediately set up the back end. Okay, now let's think about how this all goes together. Again, the primary goal stated of the company, and the only thing they've really said publicly as to what they're going to do. That may be true, Michael. Michael says, I think Mahler's father introduced him to Bitcoin. That may be, I think it's true. I do think I had that discussion with GPT today, actually. You can check the transcript and find out. That rings a bell now. But the primary goal is to increase Bitcoin per share. You're going to have X number of shares when the company drops. And that'll mean that they got 42,000 Bitcoin. If they had 40, they'll have way more than 42,000 shares. But if they did, it'd be one Bitcoin per share, right? If they had 100,000 shares, they would have 0.42 Bitcoin per share. If they had 1 million shares, 0.042. By tens makes it easy, right? So that's the goal. But again, there's no clear Bitcoin model explained in that. What does that mean? Like, what if I just, let's take Bitcoin out of it so it doesn't get confusing because they're still just talking about money. What if I came out with a company, a Jatco? I want everybody to know on May 12th, instead of dropping my book, I'm introducing Jatco. It'll be a publicly traded company. We'll be something in the financial services something arena. And our primary goal will be to increase dollars held versus shares to shareholders. Oh, that's really nice, Jack. How? Yeah. So again, that's what I went on a quest for. So I fed all this information in to GPT, and I'm like, I think I know, but I want to check my confirmation bias here. And while there is no clear business model, the Strike and Tether connections really do signal a deeper plan. And one thing you need to know, again, and this is why I cannot do this without invoking not just Mahler's, but Strike as well, is because of the way Strike works, i.e., if I owe Michael Sparks here money, and I say, what do you want? Do you want dollars or do you want Bitcoin, Michael? And he says, you know, Jack, right now I want dollars. I'm going to spend this money quickly, but not today, and I want the liquidity of the dollar, the stability of the dollar. Who knows, they can make another announcement, Bitcoin could tank or whatever for a couple of days, and I have to sell it, so I don't want to do that. I want dollars. And it turns out the only thing in my Strike wallet at the moment is Bitcoin, or at least I don't have enough dollars to pay the bill I owe him. And so you would think, I'll sell my Bitcoin, and then I'll send him dollars. But that's not what happens. I can send Bitcoin to him and he gets dollars, or I can send dollars to him and he gets Bitcoin, and I never create a trade. Well, if you think that's done on the modern banking rails with actual dollars, you would be wrong. It's done with Tether. So as long as there's been a Strike, there's been a tight relationship between Mahler's and Strike and Tether. So that's where this all kind of keys together for you here, right? You're not sending dollars. You're sending synthetic dollars. You're sending Tether, right? And you're making a trade outside of your area, so you're not bearing the tax consequences of it, other than if you send Bitcoin, effectively you created a sell. But the beauty in this for us is if I'm going to pay Texas Plant Company, and he says, Jack, I've decided to go to be a Bitcoin-only business. And I say, okay, fine. I don't want to sell my fucking Bitcoin because I don't want to take the capital gains hit and I'm stacking it. But I have dollars. I can sit and Strike and I can send Tether, which converts to Bitcoin on the send and shows up on Texas Plant Company's account on the other side. And I can send that Strike to Strike that way. But I can send my dollars to his Lightning wallet, but I start with dollars and they become Bitcoin and Lightning form on the way. It's really, really cool. But that is that connection for that to work is very, very tight. Connected family, connected families, connected larger families. That's what this all is. So Bitcoin Blackback Lending is the most logical solution here. And that's exactly the second I saw this, that's where my head went. But you guys know I've been talking about Bitcoin-backed lending for at least 3 years heavily and saying, when everybody's like, we already have that. No, we have garbage. We have pawn shops for your Bitcoin right now. In fact, pawn shops are more fair than Bitcoin. You can walk into a pawn shop with a $500 shotgun and say, look, man, I don't need to sell the shotgun. What do you think it's worth? And the guy goes, I could sell this for $500. You go, I need $100 until next week. And he'll write you a pawn ticket for like, you have to pay back $115 next week to get your shotgun back. So it's costing you 15% over 1 week. It's a huge interest rate, but it's very clear. And then there'll be a kind of a number go up, how much you got to pay. You can make a deposit payment, like you can keep it in and you can keep the money longer, but it'll be very clear. You'll understand exactly how it works. And you'll decide whether you want to post the collateral for the money or not. Some of the Bitcoin loans right now, like the ones through Coinbase, instant, no credit needed, instantly approved, everybody qualifies. But you'll post your Bitcoin, and that locks it up. And then what's your interest rate? Well, 9 to 22% on average, whatever the fuck that means, and it changes like every 9 minutes. Again, a payday loan, a pawn shop, if it's not more honest, it's easier to understand and make a decision, right? And when you're using the most pure, immediately convertible collateral in the world that can literally be locked up and instantly converted to cover the debt, you shouldn't be paying a usurious interest rate. You should be paying a reasonable interest rate somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 6%. And if Bitcoin does what Bitcoin does, a 6% interest rate is a no-brainer over time, because the Bitcoin will appreciate more than the 6%. That's why we buy houses with a mortgage at 4, 5, 6, 7%, because the house goes up more in value over time than the cost of the mortgage. That's why we do that. At least that's why educated people do that, especially real estate investors. That's why they are willing to tender even a higher interest rate than you pay as a primary homeowner. So your landlord that's renting you a house, let's say, he's not paying the interest rate that a homeowner pays. At least if they take the loan at the same time, his terms are shorter and his interest rate is higher, but he is leveraging a depreciating asset in the dollar against an appreciating asset in real estate property if he does his job right. So Bitcoin lending needs to change. And we have entities with billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin, and we have tremendous numbers of individuals with a million, a half a million, $250,000 worth of Bitcoin. And there are people out there right now, they're sitting on $500,000 worth of Bitcoin. They're renting a shitty apartment. They think long term. They're not going to liquidate their Bitcoin to buy the house. And they're going to take a huge capital gain hit if they do. And maybe they have plenty of income, but it's hard for them to qualify for a conventional mortgage or an FHA mortgage. And they'd be happy to have a $250,000 loan at 6.5% on a house, but they can't get it. So they want to borrow against their Bitcoin, which if I'm a bank, I've said this for years, the bank should be like, who do we make the check out to? And here's where to put your Bitcoin. You execute the smart contract by sending Bitcoin here. Here's the terms of the smart contract. You start making payments. Here's the conditions of release. And here's the conditions of adding more Bitcoin to cover in the event that Bitcoin goes down in volume. And here's how much spread you need. You might have to tender more Bitcoin than you borrow. But remember, it's yours and you aren't going to sell it anyway. And there'll be terms for, you know, short ending the contract and whatever. That's what it should be, but there aren't any. Part of that has been because banks up till Trump came in were not able to custody Bitcoin. And I think some of the banks are still like, sure, Trump said we could do it, but what if the next guy says we can't? So if there's more stability there, then you'll have more banks. So you get something like this, and they say, you know what, we'll do it without the guy. We don't give a shit. We have unique ways we will custody your Bitcoin for you, more like an investment firm or an exchange and issue the loan the way Coinbase is, but we'll give you better terms. That's where I think we're going here. But there's going to be multiple types of loans, and the first loans may not be for you and me. You'll have big loans that are likely custom, flexible, and overly collateralized. I am Jack Ballers Jr., and I want to start this other company. And I need $10 million to start it, right? I'll need $10 million to start it. And they'll say, okay, well, what do you got? You got $20 million worth of Bitcoin. And they're going to be like, yeah, we'll do it. Here's the terms. And you're like, this is a $10 million loan, jackasses, and it's fully collateralized. No. I want a lower interest rate. I want more flexibility. I want a better ability to end the contract. I want less penalty, even though you don't call it a penalty. When I say, you know what, I've paid off $5 million worth of a loan. The entity is successful in making money. Here's the entire balance that I owe you. I want my contract ended with no extra fee. Like each loan at that level will be individually negotiated. It will not be a retail product. This is what I think they're going to do first, because it's a large denomination loan and a small piece of a big piece is a lot. And that will enable them to hit the ground running. And they probably have these deals already in the works. So look for a overnight success that was probably built over the last 10 years. And I bet Mahler's had a lot to do with it, working back-end deals through his networks. And that was probably his, I'll do it. But when it happens, I want to be the guy, right? Because he comes from a place where his family was the guy. So he knows how to do that, or at least he has somebody in his ear telling him how to do that. You got it? That's how a guy can move that fast, that young, without being like the next, you know, savant. I think he's a very smart guy. But when I say smart, you're probably talking about the guy of like a 125 to 140 IQ. I don't think he's a guy with like a 180 off the charts IQ. Yeah? Okay. So that's the first model. But what about us? What about, because when you add up all the little guys, and when I say little guys, I'm talking about people of means, people with money, people that might be worth $10 million or $500,000. We outweigh them in the long tail. There's just so many of us that we outweigh them. There's a lot of money to be made on us too. But if Jack Spirko's going to you and saying, I got X amount of Bitcoin and I want to buy a property to develop, and it's like it's a giant building loan, and I want, I don't know, $1 million worth of a loan, then you're not gonna take your time to do all that shit I just said about what you would do with a 10, 20, 50, $100 million entity, right? And if what I'm saying is, hey, look, I just want to buy a house for $400,000, you're really not. You need a retail product. So I think those are the ones we've been talking about for the average person. You're talking about small loans, likely standardized, automated, and fast with very clear terms. I want to buy a car. I want to buy a car, even a brand new car right now, right? A brand new car right now, if it's mid-market car, a Toyota Corolla, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 bucks, and the interest rates are kind of stupid, even with a big down payment, and the person's sitting there with $100,000 Bitcoin and goes, I can just buy the car, but I don't want to. That loan needs to be something you fill out a form, and they vet that you have the Bitcoin, and then you get a link and you set it up and boom, it just happens. And you're going to get Tether in the loan, by the way. And how you make the payment, that will have to be handled on the other end, but we'll get to how they're going to help you make the payment and make money again on you when you make the car payment. Okay. All right. And when the dealership gets your money, how that's going to make the money. We'll get to all that. Okay. And Pig Eye Farm says Strike takes so long to clear Bitcoin purchase for a cold wallet storage transfer over 2 weeks. No, they don't. No, they don't. Stop saying that. I'll clear that one right now. They take that when you put money in. It takes 2 weeks for the Bitcoin you can buy instantly to become available. It's the function of how long the money's been there after it's deposited to prevent fraud. That's what that is. If you have money that's been in Strike for a month and you buy and you want to withdraw it, you can do that instantly. So it's a misunderstanding there. Anyway, what we have to remember in both of those loans, Bitcoin is perfect collateral. It's perfect collateral. It's way better than a house. And what I mean, or it's way better, it's definitely better than a car. At least a house, if properly maintained over time in our current fiat system, appreciates in value. It's worth more than when you bought it. If you've been in your house for 10 years right now, if interest rates were what they were when you bought it, you would probably really consider refinancing right now. Because, you know, if you bought a house for $250,000 10 years ago, there's a good chance right now, you even if you only did a minimum down payment, you owe like $130, $140, $150 on it. And you could refinance it, cut your payment just by extending your term if interest rates were at like the 2.5% to 4% they were back then, right? And that's good for the lender if you don't. Because now I lent you $200,000 and your house is worth $400,000 that I have collateralized against the $150,000 balance you still owe me. And okay, so that's better than a car. I loan you $50,000 to buy a car and you drive the car for 3 years and you take perfect care of it. Car's worth 35 grand. And you owe me 35 grand. So it's equalized at that point because of how loans amortize. It's amazing the number of people that are PhDs and shit that have student loan debt that don't understand what I just said, loan amortization. They borrowed the money over 4 years. They didn't start paying on it until the fifth year when they got a job, and they don't understand why the balance hasn't come down. That's because you're stupid, even though you have a college education. So, but let's go back to the car or the house, and then let's look at Bitcoin as collateral. The car is a depreciating asset, so the house wins over the car if I'm a lender, okay? But what if you're an asshole and you don't take care of shit? And then when you get financially distressed, you just start parting out pieces of your fucking house, which I've looked at foreclosed houses, like the cabinets were ripped out. The sink was ripped out. The appliances are ripped out. And you can tell when they left, they just, whatever they didn't want, they just left it there, right? So I can repossess the house and still be negative against the balance due on the loan. And then I still have to sell the fucking house. And I have a lag time. The house is not liquid. Okay. Cash is liquid. Gold is liquid. And Bitcoin is liquid. Meaning that I can sell Bitcoin instantaneously. It's fungible for a known amount. So if I loan you $200,000 and you put up $300,000 worth of Bitcoin in collateral, so that you're at a 66% of loan to value I am good from the beginning. I might require you to go above what you're borrowing because the Bitcoin is variable. And if it dropped by more than a third, I might say, hey, you need to put another $10,000 worth of Bitcoin into the contract or we're going to call short the loan. That's how that could work. But it's a pretty good deal. And what happens if you don't pay the loan? I get your Bitcoin. Whatever the terms say I'm entitled to for a penalty for you failing to make payment, I take that amount of Bitcoin and I sell it. And if there's an overage, you get it back. And that could all happen in how long? Seconds. Seconds. That can literally happen in seconds. It's liquid 24/7, 365 around the world. Nothing else can do what Bitcoin does as collateral. So it should have the most favorable loan terms. It's an over-collateralized loan and it doesn't. when you look at that as a financial person, not as a Bitcoin person, just as a person that understands money, you should be like, this is a market disruption waiting to happen. And we're not talking about disrupting, you know, the calculator market like the iPhone did with an app. We're talking about disrupting the entire lending market, the entire investment market across the entire globe with pure collateral. That's what this is. It's durable, liquid, and verifiable. You tell me something that is equivalent to that. Durable, right? Meaning it's not just that it's not going to break down and change. It's the most secure asset in the world. If you liken it to gold, imagine the gold work like this. The gold miners also provided security for gold. And if you bought gold, like a dude showed up outside your door with a gun that said nobody's getting Pig Eye Farms gold. Nobody's getting Michael Sparks' gold. This is not doable, of course. It's an analogy. And if your gold price went up enough and you bought enough gold, two dudes, now you got a dude with a gun on your front door and your back door defending your gold for you. And if it goes up high enough and you're holding enough of it, they send out two more. You're flanked all four sides. And maybe even if somebody's going to come in and steal your TV, they won't do anything. But if somebody tries to steal your gold, they'll shoot their fucking ass dead. How much better of an investment would gold be? That's exactly what Bitcoin does. The more valuable it gets, the more miners on the network, the more security is provided, and it's equally provided for your $100 in Bitcoin, somebody else's $1,000 in Bitcoin, somebody else's $1,000,000 in Bitcoin. They all get the same security. Imagine if gold could do that. Even if you had one gold coin in your safe, if we'd gotten to the point where the gold price was high enough that everybody gets all gold must be defended by 10 dudes with guns, you had 10 dudes with guns defending your one gold coin. That's what Bitcoin is. Now, if I'm a lender, what more could I ask for in a form of collateral than something liquid with that kind of a defensive capability? And it's way better than 10 dudes with guns. And I don't have to pay for them because the miners paid for it. That's how it works. So, again, real quick, current Bitcoin loans are garbage. They are payday loans. They are pawn loans at best. They are primarily used for short-term transactions. And what they're primarily being used by is Bitcoin and shitcoin traders for leverage trading, because what they want to do is borrow that money, put it to work on the exchange, make the gain from the trade, move the trade to the stack, and only pay tax on the gain, not on liquidating their own money, and that way they're holding it in reserve. That's why they can have terms like that and anybody does it. I mean, would you buy a car? Would you buy a $20,000 car with an interest rate of 9 to 22% variable? And you have to fully collateralize it to do it. In other words, you have to have the 20 grand to buy the car. You could have just bought the car, but now you're going to 9 to 22% variable loan rate to buy the car against, if you had any brains, on a 3-year loan. Right, you take 3 years to pay back. Take 3 years to pay that loan back. That car is going to cost you $150,000 at least. And it's not likely, even with what we can expect to see Bitcoin do, that you're going to break even. You're certainly not going to be ahead. And you had the risk the whole time. And at any time, if we have a variability event that goes down, you could get wiped out in the loan. I'm not doing it. But if I'm a trader and I'm like, I only need the money for 48 hours, cheap. It's like margin loan. All right. So that's what's going on now. Fixed rate Bitcoin loans could disrupt traditional finance. Imagine if it was that easy. I mean, you know how many people are sitting there and they have $500,000 in dollars and they want to buy something. They literally can't use, it's very difficult, believe it or not, to tell the bank, here's $500,000. Give me $500,000 and hold my cash in reserve. It's actually really easy to do and automate with something like Bitcoin. It's difficult, and there's legal hurdles to it. You have a company here building its own rails that in large part will be immune to a lot of regulations and laws that currently affect the existing banking system. I'm talking about the disruption of all lending and all investment banking in the world. And if you think I'm like lifting up 21 Capital, it's like when this stock comes out, no matter how high it goes, do an IPO on it. No. You're not understanding. What happens when one entity does this? Do you think this will be the only one? Right now, strategy B, i.e. MicroStrategy, can't do all this shit. They can do a lot of shit, but they can't do this. Changing the name, I think, is signaling this is what they're going to do, and they have more ammo in storage because they're sitting at like 540,000 or something Bitcoin, and these guys are going to start with 42,000. So they have the advantage of the infrastructure. Strategy B has the advantage of the quantity of ammo, the much bigger reserve, more than 10x the reserve. Don't think there might not be a partnership there. There's been some bromance shit going on since it started publicly between Jack and Michael. Just saying. Not this Jack, for those that are new here. Jack Maulers and Michael. Okay? But this is going to be the most innovative, disruptive thing to happen to economics because Bitcoin already is. They just don't realize what's happened yet. Now, Strike's tech could integrate into 21 Capital really well, especially when you got the guy in charge of both companies as the same man. Like, it's not like, let's say that Michael Saylor was the new CEO. I know it would never happen. Just say he was the new CEO here, and Jack stayed just at Strike, and they had a really good relationship. Jack still has to convince Michael that his idea is good, and then both have to convince their board that their ideas are good, okay? And they have to get enough consensus of the board plus the CEO to do the thing. You just took a step out. All Jack has to do is convince both boards. He's at the top, and he's already ready to do it. And he was put there to do it, in my opinion. And so I think initially what you will see is Strike does its thing, and 21 Capital does this thing, but there's symbiosis, and both entities are made more powerful via partnership. But I put the odds that over the next 18 to 36 months that 21 Capital literally absorbs Strike as a division at like 65 to 75%. Not a done deal, but very, very likely, because the power that would give both entities is massive. And it would be a great way to make that bifurcation on loans between these are for the poors, which might be a dude worth $10 million in this world they're playing in, right? These are for the poor. This is a mortgage loan. This is a small business loan, right? And a small business loan might be $5 million, right? That could be like a Strike division. And then this is international, you know, investment banking. It's like $50 million and up or something, or $20 million and up, or even $15 million and up on the other side. So that divisional breakdown might work well absorbing those entities together. And there'll be a point, if this goes on long enough and both entities stay profitable, the savings in cost by eliminating redundancies will make it a no-brainer. So I think that's not a done deal, but it's very, very likely. Next, I started having this conversation. Again, I'm going to make the whole transcript. It's already in a PDF. It's already linked from the show notes today of my discussion about this with AI. And when I got all this, again, I was 85 to 95% there. This is exactly what I thought the day I heard the announcement. But since it was so in league with what I was saying, I said, did I lead you to this conclusion? And I feel like I did, but I didn't. In other words, I set the stage with, analyze these things and tell me the most likely conclusion. And the things I said to analyze were the things that are like those four entities are involved, and three are primary and one is secondary. And like, what do they do? And if people that do this get together, what are they going to do? Right. But I said, is there any way we could be wrong? I said, likely no. Right. Okay. I've learned you can't just take an answer like that. So I said, assuming we're wrong, what are the other things that it could do? And it spit out like four or five things. And two of them are really interesting to me. Two of them, I'm like, how did I not see that? Right? How did I not see that? And one is bonds. See, Cantor Fitzgerald is already a company that, let's say, the city of Jacksonville, Florida needs money because it's, you know, a day that ends in Y, so they spent more than they have. And they're like, get right now, if we raise taxes, they're going to come storming over the Matthews Bridge and kill us all. So we better not do that shit. What we could do is we could sell some bonds. We'll do a bond initiative and we'll sell some bonds at like 4%, and we'll pay the money back, and we'll get the money now, and then we can tax people to pay the bond back, you know? And so they want to do that. So think about your local city, like especially if you live in a larger city, Jacksonville, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, Miami, Florida, Dallas, Texas, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, LA. Like there's some pretty, I'm not going to say they're good people, but pretty smart people in there that can do a lot of things. Do you think any of those fuckers know how to structure a bond? I mean, they might know like what they want to do, but they don't even know if it's reasonable. And for all the wizards we have, and I'm talking about technological wizardry where you fill out a form, at least not yet. There's no form you can say, we're the city of Jacksonville, Florida. Here's our reserves. Here's what we want to do. Tell us what to do. That doesn't exist. They would go to a firm like Cantor Fitzgerald. A country, especially a smaller country, you know, a country of 6 to 12 million people, would go to Cantor Fitzgerald and say, we want to do bonds. How do we do bonds? Come do it for us. So they already do this. So a Bitcoin reserve bond initiative from a state, a county, a city, a small nation, even a big nation, is right in Cantor Fitzgerald's wheelhouse. They already do it just without the Bitcoin. Now do you see the size of the market they're going after? And what does success look like for them if they get a 2% success ratio, one of the largest corporations that's ever existed? It would make Tesla look small, okay? It would make General Electric look small in dollars or it measured in Satoshis. You see how that works? It's pretty friggin' simple to understand, not to do. They're also perfectly positioned to package Bitcoin debt. In other words, a company like Strategy B that doesn't maybe, you know, the thing about MicroStrategy Strategy B is that they were already in the financial and technical analysis world. That's their actual product. The people that paid the money were mostly investment firms and banks. So they were at least somewhere in the right position. But now let's think of like, let's say Microsoft wasn't retarded. And last year, late last year, when they actually considered adding a Bitcoin reserve, they didn't decide not to do it. They said, yeah, you know what? We're going to go buy 50,000 Bitcoin. And they had done it. They had the money to do it. Especially then, eventually they might be like, well, we have this Bitcoin. What do we do with it? And there's two main ways that corporations bring money in to do new things. And one is to sell shares in the company, which dilutes what they have. That's why they do stock splits to gain it back and buy, and they issue dividends and buy back their own shares and things like that to push value back into the company. But it's not. Like you want to do that at certain points in a company. At other points, you don't want to sell off more shares of the company. The other way is to borrow it. And that can be they go to a bank and borrow it directly. But another way they'll do it is they say, we're issuing, you know, X number of bonds. And these bonds are going to pay a coupon rate of 4% over a 3-year period or something like that. And if you're Joe Spoody's Acme Catalog Company, and you do that, everybody's like, yeah, whatever, you better pay like 18%. If you're Microsoft, like, their money's green, 4%. If I have some capital that I really don't know what to do with right now for the next 3 years, I might take that deal. And they buy that bond. Microsoft doesn't fucking know how to do that. They would employ a Cantor Fitzgerald to do that for them. Now, once they had a Bitcoin reserve, they really don't know, how do I span the regulatory components of this? Can I offer a better interest rate because it's backed by an appreciating versus a depreciating asset? Remember, Bitcoin over time gets worth more, dollars get worth less. It's easy to loan money into the fiat world. It's more difficult to do into the appreciating asset world because I could just buy the asset. And there's more controls of this. So, now, like I say, now when you look at this new company or any company like it that has this type of horsepower behind it, and remember, with Trump's new regulations in place, Bank of America can custody Bitcoin. Bank of America can become a Tether competitor and partner with other people and do it. This is not about one company. This is about one company proving the model, and it's a looky-loo market. And once somebody's successful, other people jump in. That's just how it's always been, because that's how you have aggressive people and you have conservative people. It's like not conservative and liberal when it comes to investment, business strategy, what have you. You have the aggressive person that's the first mover, and you have the more conservative person with lots of money that goes, they'll make more money than me if they're successful, but if they fail, it won't hurt me at all. So they watch, and there's a certain threshold where they go, okay, the formula's there. Here's how we can improve on it. Let's jump into. That's the model that I see coming out. I also think you're going to see structured Bitcoin financial products. And what I mean by that is, instead of just a boring ETF, here is a sort of ETF, but it's not for Joe and Jim on the outside retail investors. It's for corporations. It's for institutions. It's for chartered entities that can't hold Bitcoin and want to do better than an ETF. They will be able to buy, basically, it'll be like stock in Cantor Fitzgerald, but it will be like a curated portfolio of companies that are 21 Capital. It will be like curated investment package of maybe companies that they've set up that they can bring in their butt buddy investors to invest billions of dollars in. And then there may be some retail version of that as well. And we'll start seeing unholy alliances like BlackRock going, hey, this is way better than what we have right now. We want a piece of that. We can either build it ourselves or we can go into some sort of partner entity with these folks and say, basically, we'll create the vehicle. You guys manage the vehicle and we'll market it. The level of disruption that we're talking about here is equivalent to one day there wasn't a car. The next day there was, but you get past the Model T into like the Chevy Bel Air, and all of that happens in 6 months. That's the 0 to 1 happening here. You know, you may also see this morph into a complete Bitcoin native banking system. Imagine what you can do with Strike with stability added right now. You pay your bills with Bitcoin, you earn Bitcoin, you spend Bitcoin, you save Bitcoin, you invest Bitcoin. That's all you do. Now, a lot of you are going, I don't know, that's what I want to do with my Bitcoin because I still have custody. And you're smart, you're right, and you should. But when you grow your entire portfolio to being nothing but Bitcoin, you start thinking in buckets with your Bitcoin the way that right now you think in buckets with your money. What I mean by buckets with your money? Right now, all your dollars are in buckets, assuming you're not poor as shit and have no money. If you are, you know, somebody that's in their 40s or older, you've been putting money away your whole working career, you have a 401k, et cetera, you have money in savings, you have money in checking, you probably have a box with some cash flow that's somewhere in your house because sometimes things go wrong. You might have some CDs. You might even have some laddered CDs. You probably hold some stocks or bonds or something that are not in retirement accounts like 401ks and 403bs and IRAs. And you probably have some money that is. And each, even though they're all dollars, well, they're not dollars, Jack. I'm holding Microsoft or I'm holding Ford or, you know, General Electric. It's still denominated in dollars, isn't it? The stock is a vehicle. And then the holding cup of the stock is a vehicle within a vehicle, right? So I have Ford stock in my IRA. So you have it in the IRA bucket and in the Ford stock sub bucket. I'm holding a Spider ETF in my IRA. So you have the IRA bucket and then you have the stock bucket all in dollars. If we move to a Bitcoin standard, either individually, some large portion, or the whole damn world, don't expect that would be any different. There will be a point where you start to see more stability in the Bitcoin price. It continues to be more powerful, but you're going to stop seeing these God candles, these giant green dildo candles of it, you know, going up 10% in 2 days and people thinking that's not enough. That world will wane and you'll see it be more a monetary instrument than it is right now as that occurs. Or it may not. And we'll get to more on that in just a minute. What I really see here is eventually, even if we don't go to like what people mean when they say a Bitcoin standard, some portion will. And what you're really looking at is a full Bitcoin financial ecosystem We do not have a full Bitcoin financial ecosystem anywhere right now. Maybe we have little mini micro ecosystems because, you know, Bill has gone all Bitcoin. And even if people pay him in dollars, he instantly converts. He uses Stripe Bill Pay or he uses River or something else like that. When he's forced to spend fiat, he's smart. So he uses a fold card. He gets his cash. He gets his cash back in Bitcoin. He gets his spins. He refers his friends to the spin squad and he has a nice dividend coming back. And as soon as that's high enough, it goes into his stack and he's running in a Bitcoin ecosystem, but he's still interfacing with fiat. And you think of him like a really big fish tank. He's like a 300-gallon tropical fish tank in your house. Yes, that's an ecosystem unto itself, but crack the glass and the water comes out and all the fish die. So he's dependent upon something on the outside holding an ecosystem. And the bigger the ecosystem gets, the more stable it becomes. So if you have a 2-acre pond in your backyard, there's things that can crash that ecosystem, but your power going out for 2 weeks doesn't crash the ecosystem. You going on vacation thinking you hired someone that knew how to take care of your tank doesn't crash the ecosystem, right? That pond could be there. You could die. No one knows you died because you were an asshole. No one liked you. And you could be gone for 20 years, and that pond probably still has fish swimming in it. That ecosystem is very stable. And if it's 200 acres, you know, other than like sedimentation and the trophic cycle and things like that, that lake's probably going to be there thousands and thousands of years unless there's some kind of catastrophe. That's the type of, when I say Bitcoin ecosystem, I'm talking about. When something gets big enough, its stability becomes enormous. And then it becomes full on, I want that too. Think about the concept where every billionaire switches on just to the, just billionaires, not even millionaires, not even like, I would call like centillionaires, people worth $100 million or more. Only billionaires decide, right now, you know what? I'm an idiot that I never bought Bitcoin. If every billionaire tries to buy 100 Bitcoin right now, what happens? There's more billionaires than you think. Somebody look that up for me. Use Google or ChatGPT or Grok. How many billionaires are there in the world? And if they all wanted, they're billionaires, right? They don't do anything small. If every billionaire wanted 1,000 Bitcoin right now, how many Bitcoin would that be? Versus what's sitting on exchanges. If somebody wants to do that math for me, that'd be cool. But the big thing about this is 21 Capital is not just holding Bitcoin, or their plan is not just to be holding Bitcoin. It's to use it and enable other people to do so. They do not even get one Bitcoin. I don't think that's true, Builder. I don't think that's true. I think it's true of millionaires. I don't think it's true of billionaires. I think there's enough Bitcoin that every billionaire could get one Bitcoin, but I'd like to know what happens if they all try to buy 1,000. Like, I want to know how many Bitcoin would that be versus the total supply available, which if it goes high enough is somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 million because we don't know how many it's lost, stranded, gone. So if every billionaire wanted 1,000 Bitcoin and it went up so high that everybody would sell to them, would there be enough to cover it even if the whole available supply, in theory, like long-term wallets, everything, ETFs, everything, I don't know that it could cover. I'm sure it could do it at one. 2.5 million available on exchanges. That's available on exchanges. Okay. How many billionaires are there in the world? Be interesting to know. I don't know that there's 2.5 million billionaires. Remember what a billion is. A billion is not 100 million. A billion is $1,000 billion. 3,028 billionaires known in the world. 3,028. If they all want to buy 1,000 Bitcoin, somebody do that math for me. I'm not that good in my head. What is that? 3 million? 3.28 million? Or 3.028 million Bitcoin? You think that might have a little bit of a supply shock on the system when we're already down to what are we producing right now? 3.125 Bitcoin per block. Oof. That is more than is available on exchanges. 2.2 million times 3,000 plus billionaires. If they all try to get 1,000, that's $3 million Bitcoin. These people have way more than enough money to buy Bitcoin in 1,000 Bitcoin blocks. We're talking about tying into like all the international capital in the world. So is this Jack saying to buy Bitcoin?
Yes, it is. But it's Jack saying to buy Bitcoin like he's been saying since 2013. If you ape shit in right now, there's every probability that some piece of bad news could come out, and by June you could be cut down by a third. Be smart about how you invest. This is not rah, 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 buy Bitcoin. This is what's happening. But if you don't understand this disruption, I really think, you know, I honestly think if you don't own any Bitcoin right now at all, I don't know there's anything I can say at this point to wake you up. I've only been chanting this for 12 years now, right? There's, Adrian says there's 55 million millionaires. Now, just them all trying to buy. That actually seems low. That actually seems low. But it, that would be, what, a third each, roughly, that they could buy? If all of it that was ever made was available and would be willing to be sold, it would be a third each. The scarcity of this commodity is not understood. And this is what leads us to start talking not in Bitcoin, but in Satoshis. I wouldn't be surprised in the next 10 years if it's not Bitcoin becoming the unit of account, it's actually sats. You get up to somewhere like $1 million Bitcoin, you're looking at one penny sats. You get up to $10 million Bitcoin, which is totally possible, you're looking at sat being a dime. 10 sats are a dollar. Maybe we come up with a name for that, a decisat or something. And the decisat is the unit of account. They probably won't call it that. That's not a prediction. But the concept that it could be, why not? The dollar is right now. But what if this is the only people I've seen get close to where I am today? And I am not an egotist. I'm not saying no one else has said all these things. I don't know. I might get an email this tomorrow morning that says, Jack, everything you said has already been said. Here's a video or an audio of it. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think this is that hard to understand where this is going. If you just look at our entities here, let's even leaving the Strike connection out, which we shouldn't, but let's do it. And again, we're back to Cantor Fitzgerald in investment banking, trading, and financial services, partnering with Tether, who's a stable coin pegged to real world currencies that invests in safe investments like U.S. Treasuries and holds Bitcoin reserves, and SoftBank, who invests heavily in tech and financial startups. What the fuck else would they do? Why the fuck else would they buy and stake themselves into the corporate treasury of a new entity, almost 50,000 Bitcoin, if they weren't going to do this? So when I tried to find anybody saying this, I found one dude, don't even know his name. I have a link in the show notes, and it says right next to the link, it says, note, I do not fully agree with this. He basically sees it as a new world order plot. They're going to suck all the liquidity out of the world into their own private financial fiefdoms with their own payment rails, basically everything I said, except it's dark and sinister. Okay, that's more of a reason to own Bitcoin. That's more of a reason to own Bitcoin. So even, and then if you're Cantor Fitzgerald, and this is not what you're doing, but other entities are going to do it, or if by natural process, this is the demise of the dollar in real time and it's short term on the dollar, it's the only play you have. But I don't think that's how this is set up. To be clear, I think Saylor was right years ago when he kind of first came out and snapped to this, that for this to be best, and think about whenever somebody says best, they mean best for me and the people I associate with. Michael Saylor is a billionaire. So when he says best, he means best for billionaires and like his friends that are centillionaires and cool enough to play in the cool kids party, right? Best for them. It's for us to have Bitcoin as a store of value and a reserve to borrow against and still have a currency like the dollar to borrow with. I want to stake my Bitcoin. I want to borrow dollars. I want to hold on to the appreciating asset, and I want to spend the depreciating asset. And I want all my debt to be in depreciating assets and all my reserves to be in appreciating assets. I mean, millionaires, billionaires have been doing this forever using primarily real estate and corporations to do it. If I borrow against my company, I borrow against my real estate, I have cash flow tax-free. And I need an appreciating asset and a depreciating currency to do that. So I think the plan is exactly that. And I think what the point here is, extend the life of the dollar. Can we kick the can at least another 50 years for the dollar? I know some of you think that cannot be done. But I do not, for one minute, think you're right when you say that. I do not. especially if you do this. You actually strengthen the longevity of the dollar by doing this. You're basically going to double the dollars without doubling inflation. So for that, I know what I just said. Some of you that are especially smart people are like, what the hell is he talking about? What could he possibly mean? Double the dollars in effect without doubling inflation. Well, because only the existing dollars will stay in, only the quantity of existing dollars will stay in inflation. And this is a brilliant way to bring dollars back to America. Again, this is not ethical. This is functional judgment I'm doing here. What I mean by that is, let's say you're a company in Japan or China and you want to play in this world. And you want stable coins as part of how you want stable coins in dollars in this game. And you're going to need them. It's going to be set up. You can't bring in Tether and think they're going to let you use, yuan unless there's a reason, right? Unless there's a reason that they're going to benefit by creating a stable for you. But even if they do, you're going to have to pay them dollars. And they're going to take your dollars, and the number one thing they do with it, and the number one thing they will keep doing with it, is buy U.S. treasuries. So the dollars come in, Tether holds them, or whatever stable company holds them, or whatever bank holds them, parks them in a guaranteed vehicle with a 4% or 3.5% ROI. And the only thing they do for it is run a network that they're already running that can scale infinitely. So they haven't lent any money. This isn't fractional reserve. It's similar, but it's not the same. It rhymes, but it doesn't repeat. Okay? So to make it simple, Charles, thank you for the comment. That's a great episode. I appreciate that. Charles here, he says, I want to buy Jack stable coins. Instead of Tether, we call them Jether, right? I want to buy Jether from the Bank of Jack. And Jack says, well, how many would you like? And he says, 10,000. And I say, great, pay me 10,000 US dollars. And he goes, okay, here. And I go, here's 10,000 Jack Jethers, right? 10,000 Jethers. And you're probably actually going to get like 9,998 Jethers. I'm actually going to charge a little bit of a premium just to do the conversion for you. And then when I transmit them for you, I'm going to charge you another fee. But I get all 10,000 of your dollars, right? And I'm going to go to the United States government. I'm actually going to go to the Goldman Sachs or similar, and I'm going to buy $10,000 worth of U.S. treasuries, and I'm going to hold them. They're not moving. They're not multiplying through the economy. They're not directly anyway causing inflation. It's the same number in circulation, but I'm actually holding the dollars in an American institution and in the form of American debt being paid back to me in America. You start to see how that all pieces together. And now, if you are a long-term student of what I teach economically, entrepreneurially, lifestyle design, now reevaluate what Trump's doing. Again, this isn't Orange Man good or Orange Man bad. Now reevaluate a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Now reevaluate Trump saying the banks can custody Bitcoin. Now reevaluate Trump saying banks can issue their own stable coins. Now understand that on a totally different level. Now understand why I've been talking in ways that you guys thought I was fucking crazy for talking for so long about this. Now it all comes together. Now understand why I went and sanity checked this against AI without trusting it and making it develop its own conclusion to see if they matched. You get it? That's what's coming here. And again, I have a link to this guy, and he is a bit, I would say, in the Alex Jones world, they're trying to trap you. They're going to get you. But the conclusion he seems to come to is the same. You better own some damn Bitcoin. You better self-custody and don't sell it to them. I agree with the conclusion on that. I am going to take some questions now. There's only four. Again, I'm a one-eyed Jack for real in real life. And I am by myself today. So if you've asked a question and you don't see it, you might want to re-ask it. And if you re-ask it while I'm answering these, I'll get to you, and then we'll close up. First, I have from Texas Plant Company. Do you think FDIC will provide insurance on the accounts for 21 Capital? Absolutely not. Now, if they actually create the equivalent of a banking division, a Bitcoin-backed bank, that may have to go under FDIC for U.S. deposits. But this initial entity, it won't have FDIC. That will be the trade-off. But the the advantage will be none of the bullshit. None of the bullshit. Nothing in there is actually in actual dollars. It's in Tether and Bitcoin. That's the brilliance of it. So, no, I don't think that will be FDIC. I do think that as actual FDIC banks begin issuing their own stable coins, some portion thereof may be under FDIC. Or the underlying – so you'll have to understand what's really happening when this goes. So now it's not Tether. See, Tether's not a bank. They kind of look like a bank. They smell like a bank. They talk like a bank, but they're not a bank. If it's Bank of America, if they still exist, I don't even know because I don't use big banks. If it's J.P. Morgan Chase and they issue their equivalent of J.P. Morgan Tether, like Morgan Tether, right? They already are FDIC. And it may be that any individual holding their synthetic dollars is treated like a depositor because that's what they really are. They gave you money, and you did the same thing you do with it anyway. You put it into treasuries as part of your reserve, right? Because they don't lend your money out. That's the myth. If you understand fractional reserve, you know how stupid it is to say, I give money to the bank and they lend it out. Well, they do, but they lend it to the government. They lend it to themselves by buying some other asset that they hold. When they lend Texas Plant Company $250,000 to go out and buy a house, they don't take your money and give it to him. They hold your money in some form of reserve, and they actually create new money by making the loan. That's what fractional reserve is. When they make a journal entry, his promise to repay creates the new dollars. So that structure, if it doesn't go away, it's going to have some FDIC component to it. In other words, you have to cover any individual for up to whatever amount it is. It's like $250,000. So if I was holding $400,000 and something happened to that bank and it crashed, a quarter million of it would then have to be. And if I had it from multiple banks and they both crashed, it'd be a quarter million per incident, just like a depositor. I think that will happen. I do not know that that will happen. And the fact that I don't know means no one has come out and given guidance on that and cleared it up. And it's probably a big piece of why it's not available yet. It's why the banks aren't doing it yet. For them to they need to understand what is our liability if we go into this business. Pig Eye Farm sent me a $5 super sticker. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Texas Plant Company, price prediction in 1 year for those new company. I think he's asking me like the stock price prediction. Well, first they have to like close and become the entity fully, and then they have to go public. So I have no idea. Now, I thought he was going to ask me for a price prediction on Bitcoin in 1 year, which I hate. I hate, and I'll tell you why. I hate it right now more than I usually would hate it at 1 year. I think it's completely reasonable that if you ask me what's price prediction sometime this fall, it's very possible that we're looking at 180 to 250. And if this all goes the way it's supposed to and other people start doing it, it could blow that out of the water. The question is, are we a super cycle or just a typical cycle? And if we're a typical cycle, this is the fourth year of the four-year cycle, and you know what comes next. Three ups and one down. So wherever we are in fall, we will probably be amid the full correction about this time next year. So I don't know. Like usually up until now, I was actually really good at saying, we'll see the high somewhere in here, right? Because we always do. And then even if I don't know what that high is, I can do math and tell you the low. And I'll tell you how accurate that's been. Last cycle, I said, the high's in. Here's the low. And I think I called the low at like 14.4. And you can go look it up and see how well I did. I was in within hundreds of dollars on something priced that high, which is about as good as, technical analyst, whatever. That's about as good as anybody could do. And when it did hit 14.4, it was like 15.2 or something. I said, that's it. There's a show. If you go and you look, and probably what you could do is go to the Survival Podcast or Bitcoin Breakout and search on the search bar for the term accumulation trough. And you'll hear me saying at that time, this is it. This is now. Don't be fucking emailing me 2 years from now when it's at a new, you know, approaching a new all-time high going, how do I buy Bitcoin? Do that right now. This is the time. Some of you probably in the chat will remember that term, accumulation trough. So here we are. And I did a show. I think it was called something like, it will never be this easy to stack Bitcoin again. It's something like that where I talked about that. And I called that low perfectly. I won't fucking touch that right now. There's too much going on that could be the end of that repeatable, predictable cycle of up, 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 massive decline, little bit level, up, up, decline. Like that, we could be past that, but every time you think we're there, we're not. But I've never seen anything like this, and I don't think anybody has. There's never been anything like this, and I don't mean it the way Trump says that about fucking everything, right? You know, people are saying they've never seen anything like this. What? You drank a fucking ginger ale, right? You know, it's the best ginger ale ever. Everybody knows it, right? You know, I'm not talking about that. I mean, literally, nobody in history has seen anything like this. Even like leaving the barter system and shifting to gold or silver in history did not happen this way and this fast, right? We live in a time where things can change so quickly. And people look at Bitcoin and go, you know, but it's supposed to be hyper-Bitcoinization or whatever. But if you had gone back when Bitcoin was $300 and said, what's the price if Bitcoin is hyper-Bitcoinization? They would have said, I don't know. If you said 100 grand, they would say, oh, yeah, like that'll never happen. We've touched that a couple of times. We're a little bit below it right now. That's not hyper-Bitcoinization. So I really don't know. But I could do odds. If you want odds, I think that's a fair way to do it. The odds, I believe, you're going to hate my number because I almost sound like the weatherman that won't commit. The odds that this is where the cycle breaks and we stop having the big sell-off corrections, at least for a time, because it could go so parabolic that eventually it has to be reined in. And that's what any commodity money will do. It will rip and it will adjust back down and the market will discover the price, okay? But I'm going to say 60%. I'm not going to go 50 because that's just, you're just being a bitch when you say 50%. Even if you think the number 50%, you need to take a stake 40 or 60, right? I'd say it's 60% odds that we don't see the major sell-off the way we have, or at least if we do, it's because it ripped to something ridiculous. Like if it rips like 800 grand and it could, I'm not saying it will, but if it did, then I would expect it to really retract. And I would say at that point, my calculus would totally change. But if it does what it looks like it will do this year, 60%, then it will not have, you know, a 70, 80% drawdown this time. Because there's just too much holding it up. You've got the ETFs. You've got shit like we're talking about today. Builder of castles, dollar versus bricks versus Bitcoin. Is it only a matter of time before Bitcoin wins? Is there any other conclusion? There isn't any other conclusion. And what you have is the dollar with a Bitcoin partnership. That's what this is. You're going to stop seeing dollar versus Bitcoin here. The dollars are what we do the shit with, and the Bitcoin is how we hold the wealth. Okay? BRICS, what is BRICS going to do? What is BRICS going to do to compete with this? The power of BRICS is in the sheer number of people in their economies and the diversity. And, you know, some of the BRICS nations have people that are willing to literally scrub shit till it shines with a toothbrush, but they have more PhDs than us at the same time. That's their power. It's not their fucking currency. So the thing they've always talked about is gold. Gold can't fucking compete with this, okay? And if you're dealing with this, whether it's the government holding it, whether it's a banking consortium holding it, whether it's a conglomerate like 21 Capital, no matter who it is, you can say, where's your fucking address? And you can validate that they have what they say they have. And you can always take custody out. And if they don't let you do that, you don't put your money in. If you're going to have a BRICS currency and they say we have billion tons of gold, unless they're going to have somebody go audit it once a month, who's actually going to do the chemical analysis to make sure that, like, the 20-kilogram lead bar doesn't have two kilograms of fucking lead or tungsten in it, right? Like, if you're going to do that, You have to trust Russia and China and India with your money. Now, does that mean I trust the United States government? No, but I do trust the Bitcoin ledger. So the only way I see BRICS competing with this is to emulate it. So it's not BRICS versus Bitcoin. It's when does BRICS capitulate if they're going to have a currency and adopt Bitcoin as the reserve? And I think there are already signs that that's going to happen. I think that Russia and China are both holding more Bitcoin than we know. And I bet it's all on smaller addresses. When I say smaller, you know, a couple thousand here, a couple hundred there. And it looks individualized, but it's really actually held by state actors. And they don't want anybody to know yet. Because that's, by the way, that's what China does with all its gold. If you're in the gold mining business, you're not mining gold so you can take the gold out of the ground and keep it. You're mining gold so you have a cost of mining versus a cost of commodity. The commodity cost has to be higher than the mining cost. And you mine the gold and you sell the gold and you make the cash. That's how gold, and they might save some gold, right? But the fact that gold is fungible, like Bitcoin is, like the dollar is, that you could just, one unit of gold is one unit of gold, and there's a global market, well, you can do it. And they'll pay you the market rate. The Chinese, for all the evil shit we say about them, are certain things they do on the level with business. So let's say you're a U.S. or a Brazilian or an Australian gold mining company, and you're really good at mining gold. And there's a gold reserve in China, and you think, I can go mine that shit and make a lot of money. I know how to get at it. It was way easier for you to go to China and mine gold than come to America and mine gold. They're like, we have environmental regulations too, but yeah, fuck it, we need the gold. Go ahead and do it. Here's a waiver. You can mine the shit out of gold in China as a foreign company. There's one condition. The gold that comes out of the ground gets sold to who? The Chinese government. They're your buyer. And most of it, they've been holding. They have a lot more gold, I think, than we think. And that's why they think they can do this. China may be redoing what they did as a huge mistake in the past. If you go back in history, when the world said this bimetallic thing doesn't work, and we really, like, silver is really not a monetary metal. Silver is really a commodity metal. It has value, but it's not really what we want to base the global economic system on. We want to base it on gold. Well, China had a lot of silver. And China was really good at mining silver. And they had run their economy on silver, not gold, for a very long time. And they had imported a lot of silver by exporting a lot of goods as a global player. And so the world said, we're going to go gold. And China said, we're going to stay silver. And they got fucking slaughtered economically. That's how they were weak enough for a company the size of Japan to fuck them up in the beginning of World War II. Okay? Because that, if you look at Japan and their natural resources and their size and their population, even at the time, versus China, like, it doesn't even make sense. But they were financially crippled by choosing the wrong horse in the race. If they stick to gold and gold only, you may see that. Now, if they start taking their gold and using it to stack Bitcoin, they could be a major player in this. It's which one they will they do? And, you know, China has a history of once they say something, being so worried about saving face that they stick to it even when they should have pivoted, especially on a global scale. So we'll see what they do. But this isn't really BRICS versus Bitcoin. This is Bitcoin versus the world. And if you want to play in that world, you're going to have to include Bitcoin in it. And I think BRICS will. I really do, because they have, again, the human resources they have. And for all the talk, AI is going to do everything. Robots are going to do everything. You know what? When you make a robot that can come to my place and I say, I don't like this house anymore. Here's $500,000 and a set of plans. Build me a house. And I don't mean, you know, there's a robot that does the printing of the concrete walls. Okay, I get that. I mean, pull up, build me a house. Like, one guy drives a truck, and even if one guy has to go get, like, the truck drives itself, and the house gets built. The house deals with the bullshit with permitting. The robots deal with, hey, the engineer that made these plans said this works, but it doesn't. The robot can figure out how to change the configuration of the PEX line that brings water to the master bedroom. Can figure out when they get there, we were going to pour a concrete slab here, but there's a big boulder there where we moved. Like, until that happens, you can forget about it. Like, that's pretty rudimentary, actually. Now let's run a fiber line from Dallas to fucking Denver, and let's get a robot to do all of the on-site decision. Like, the world where that's all going to be done by robots, if ever, is way out there. Anything that requires real-time decision-making is fairly AI-proof for the future, if you're trying to look for something to do that's AI-proof. Socko Mag says, do you think big entities would cause a scare to the market to drive down the price of Bitcoin to monopolize more Bitcoin? And I can't say that hasn't happened already. Look at the tariff scare. The tariffs don't mean shit in reality. The only one that means anything is China. And most of what that applies to is junk. Like, all the talk of tariffing the whole world, we really didn't do it. What happened, though? Even though the Bitcoin price sort of decoupled from the stock market, it repressed quite a bit. 20 grand per Bitcoin was a big drop if you're a buyer. If you're a long-term holder, you didn't give a fuck. If you've been a long-term holder, you really didn't give a fuck. If you held through 14.4 in the last bottom, or 15.3 or whatever it was, you don't give a fuck about 80 grand, 75 grand. Fuck, I don't care. Who gives a shit? If you've been holding since Bitcoin was like 600 bucks like me, you really could not give a toss about if it went down 30,000 bucks right now. You just like, what can I sell around here to buy some more? But if you're a buyer and you're buying in volume, it's a bigger discount than you're going to get in volume buying ball bearings, ain't it? You know? So I think that's already happened. Could it happen more? Sure. And if you see some quake event come that causes a major scare in the market, do not fucking sell. Do not sell. Don't sell. And let me say, there's another part that goes with that. Okay. And the other part that goes with that is, do not put money that you really might need in the next year into anything volatile, let alone Bitcoin. Because what sucks is when the need to sell and the drop in the market cross, and you're like, fuck. And that's where it'd be great to have like reasonably termed loans. And that would bridge a gap, and that would actually reduce the volatility. See, when we get good loans, we get reasonable loans, 6% fixed rate, 5-year loan on your Bitcoin. That's actually gonna divorce us from volatility, because you won't have people selling in the trough that are often selling in the trough only because they have to sell. A lot of people that sell, like Bitcoin dropped to, let's say right now Bitcoin dropped to 50 grand. That would be a huge drop. That would have everybody shitting their pants. You know who sells? Some of our young people that show up here all the time and cry and bitch and whine and piss and moan. And about, you know, but I bought some and it went down. And that fucker's holding like 500 bucks worth. Those retards sell. Okay. And people that have to. Like, my car got in a wreck. The insurance company gave me a check for 17 grand. I need a car to work and I can't buy a car that does what I need for work because I'm a contractor. And I need actually two trucks now, instead of one that I had budgeted for. And even if I'm buying used, and now fuck, I have to sell. Or my wife got cancer. Or I got hit with a hurricane, but the insurance company won't give me any money because I don't have flood insurance. And if that person selling coincides with the downturn in the market, it affects volatility to the negative. And you might wonder how, like, if the guy needs 50 grand, he's going to sell 50,000. Well, no. He's going to sell about 60 if he has capital gains on it to put aside money to pay the tax man, okay? But he's going to sell more Satoshis. He's going to sell more Bitcoin. You are fiat addicted to numbers, a fiat number addiction. So you're thinking in $50,000. I'm thinking in how much Bitcoin, how many Satoshis does it take to raise that much? So because people are forced to sell in down markets, They sell more during the down market, more units, therefore drive the price down further. If that person could go to the bank and say, look, I had this disaster, the bank's like, we don't give a fuck about your disaster. Okay, I want $50,000. Well, you just said disaster and you wanted $50,000. That doesn't sound like we're going to give you money. Here's $100,000 worth of Bitcoin in a smart contract. Can I have $50,000, please? In this new world, yes, sir, fill out this form, send your Bitcoin to this contract address, and we'll cut you a check tomorrow. That's the world this moves us toward. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I hope it was a good one for a first one back. We got up over 100 in a live stream. I don't know if that's just because I was gone or whatever. That's really high for a Bitcoin show. It is my least popular topic of all the topics that I do. What I want to wrap up with today, I'll have an item of the day, you know, sponsors wraps it. I want to tell you how I was able to produce a show like this. I shared with you that I used AI, but without it, I'm in a crunch. We have actually a social engagement this evening with some really good friends and all. I'm coming back off the road. My email box was like ridiculous when I got in. I got all these other things going on. I could not have done a show today like this without GPT. Not just to do the part I said, but like to write my descriptions, to write my promotional verbs, all of that. I would have had to like recycle something I can do standing on my head, not new material, right? And then it's still beneficial. And again, in these show notes, okay, I'll answer that and then I'm going to go on. Eddie said, why do you choose GPT versus Grok 3? Well, first of all, I think Grok is way behind GPT right now. It may catch up, but for all of the hype, I'm sorry, I've used both, it's behind. But the other side of it is, it's a tool. It's a tool. So what's better for editing? The Mac video editing software, the high-end stuff, not GarageBand, that's audio only, Final Cut, right? What's better, Final Cut or Vegas? I don't fucking know. What am I going to use? Vegas. Well, I have 20 years of experience with Vegas. I have to learn a new platform. And you're going to see if you go download the work I did there in that PDF. That the tool is, I'm done with questions, Lions. I'm not going to answer about every platform because it's the same answer for all of these, okay? The tool is the thing, and the tool needs an operator. I give one guy a basic set of hand tools, a saw, a drill, a freaking impact driver, a square, like a full set of tools, and a stack of lumber, and he builds a house that you would like, oh my God. And I give another person all the same shit, and they nail themselves to a board and kill themselves when they trip over the other board, and they fall on a shovel and a pick goes through your head because they don't know how to use a tool. I choose GPT because I've been using it for 2.5 years, and that applies to what I'm about to say, okay? And so I'm going to give away that PDF today that shows everything I did up until I started creating content. All the research, all the discussion, it's in a, you can download and you can read it, okay? And I also said I'm going to do this AI course, and it is kind of modeled on what I did with Josh Hale, but I honest to God, I'm not putting down Josh. I'm talking about just one product. I'm sure he's good at what he does or he wouldn't be successful. I didn't get out of that course what I wanted to get out of it, but I liked the basics of the model. And his model, he used a signal group. Every day he dropped a prompt in. You took the prompt, you dropped it in, you saw what it did, you had a discussion. And if you wanted to, you came back and then discussed it with the other people in the group. That core model I liked. I found it very thin. I found a lot of it to be things I didn't care about. Like, I don't need a schedule of when to change my HVAC filters and all. And he was trying to do it very introductory. People just want to get their fingers wet. But I knew right away when I started seeing this discussion go around, people were interested in building businesses, forming businesses, understanding businesses, developing messaging for businesses. That's what people were looking to do. Writing content for their businesses, et cetera. So I angled it that way from the very beginning. And as I built it, and I used AI to build it, and while I was building it, I made a decision. And I'm going to tell you what it is, even though I didn't plan to. At the end of the course, I'm going to give the entire transcript to all the students of how I built the course. I can't do it in the beginning because it will ruin the course. And when I explain how it's going to work, you'll see why. Basically, you'd have all the prompts before you're supposed to. I want one prompt a day, or actually it's not even a prompt. It's a series of prompts and instructions on how to use them. And I have a book called The Instructor's Handbook, and you have a student handbook. And the only thing not in your student handbook is the prompts and the instructions. So every day I'm going to drop the instructions and the prompts for that day. You paste them into GPT, but you also paste them into your book, and you make your notes. And it's all there. And it even tells you how to share your information with others. And then we're going to have probably a Telegram group, but I'm going to talk to Tom probably tomorrow or the next day because I'm beat and I've got a busy day today. Maybe there's even a better way to do this with like a small satellite site or something. And that way there'll be this record of everything you've learned and everything everybody else has learned and all the interaction together with all people with that mindset. I am also going to do, as a bonus into this course, on a daily basis, if I use it for the show, everything I used it for the show that day in a transcript, just as an addition, you'll be able to say, well, Jack, you get a show today on, I don't know, biochar. Here's the transcript of him building that. And I will include the content creation, the image creation, all of that. Now, when I originally did this, I saw it like as a beefed up version of Josh with better direction. And I was $20-$30. I'm thinking this might be a $100 course with a 100 student limit. And I, honest to God, if somebody else was building it, I would be, we're here, here's my money, but I'm not ready. I want in. Here's my money. Right. And I would say we might do this multiple times. And there's some other things that I would add in. Once I talk to Tom and make sure we can do what I want to do and make it easy, that will be unadvertised, that will add more value. And if you've ever thought, man, I wish Jack Spierka would be my business mentor, how about I'm your business mentor in implementing AI for roughly 90 days? Or no, what would it be? 60 days for $100. If you wouldn't pay $100 for me to do that for you, don't take this course because you won't get it. But I think when I add all that in, the reason I'll add it in is it's just value that I actually don't have to do a lot of work to provide. Once I have the structure set up, it's pretty easy for me to say, take everything we've discussed today, turn it into a transcript. I'm giving you a prompt, by the way. Make sure it's very clear when it's me and when it's you. Format it into a Word document for me to download. Download. Convert the PDF. Upload. That's the whole thing for me to be able to do for that day. Guys, here's the link for today's show. Boom. Just like I'm already doing. So I can add 5 minutes of work a day. And honestly, if I look at it that way, that's $5,000 a piece for me and Tom. I'm willing to do all that for $5,000 a day. I'm not willing to do it for $1,000. I'm not. And I need to start doing some things in my business that do more rev share with Tom because he's earned it. He deserves it. And I think that the way to build that lasting partnership where I don't have to ever look for another Tom is to make sure that that happens. So, and by the way, if you are a business person and you have a website prop, especially if it's built on WordPress and you need help, talk to him. Talk to him. He's the best I've found. And I've been doing this 17 years in June. He's the best I've ever worked with. And I don't say that just because he's my guy. I'm telling you, he's my guy because I say that. Anyway, guys, hope you enjoyed today's show. No products or anything today. Do your online shopping starting at T-Spaz if you want to help support us. Consider becoming a member. Remember, our book, Laws of Life, drops on the 12th of May. The ambassador positions are gone. Don't send me an email asking for one backdoor or anything. When I say a thing, I mean a thing. They're gone. But you can still get on the list, get notified, all of that, and there's going to be some really cool bonuses for those that buy the book on the first day and do what it says to do on the back of the book. By the way, if you are somebody that bartered with me for one of the proofs, please don't give people that URL. With that, I'll catch you tomorrow with something totally different. I promise. Take care. Just run you around. You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have.